To briefly summarize what we discussed yesterday for the benefit of those who are come today, and I strongly recommend that even if you would like to get someone, kindly do not get from tomorrow, because they will lose the logical sequence and they'll wonder why we are speaking a little illogical. Because this course is designed in such a way that unless the person is attended from day one or maximum day two, afterwards everything seems little illogical if they have not followed the line of thought. So I request that if you have anyone in mind who has not been able to come for the first 2 days, better we have other courses, regular courses, they can join the others. So yesterday we discussed about the importance of the human form of life, how human life is not simply merely meant for making arrangements for eating, sleeping, mating and defending alone, but to inquire about the cause of suffering and the destination of life. And first of all, to understand the real problems of life, which is common to all. No one wants it, but no one can avoid. And that is birth, old age, disease and death, and also miseries caused by one's own body and mind, miseries caused by other living entities, and miseries caused by natural disturbances. We also discuss about how mere technological advancement in the name of advancement of civilization cannot actually solve the real problems of life. Real advancement means that process by which one can overcome the real problems of life, not to enhance it or not to complicate it further. Therefore, that is real advancement of human form of life. How expertly have they developed a culture, a system whereby they can permanently remove all the problems of life, solve the problems of life. So we discuss about the futility of mere technological advancement. Can come here, there is one more chair. Mere technological advancement in solving the problems of life. And therefore, everyone should actually inquire about, is there a permanent solution for all the problems of life, permanent relief from all miseries, and is there a way by which one can find eternal happiness, peace and bliss? And we discuss how until and unless we are convinced that the path that we are traversing right now cannot give us that solution and the aspiration that we have of finding peace and happiness, we will not understand the necessity as to why we should listen to all this, why we should take shelter of the Bhagavad Gita or any scripture, bona fide scripture for that matter. In fact, the Vedanta Sutra, all the Vedas have been given in sutra form, very cryptic and short aphorisms. Just like E is equal to MC squared. This is a very condensed form of a very grave and high truth. So all the Vedas have been condensed in about 556 sutras. And the first sutra of Vedanta, Brahma Sutra, says, Athato Brahma Jigyasa. Now that we have got a human form of life, Brahma Jigyasa, inquire. Human life is meant for inquiry about what? Brahma. And that is the purpose of human form that we discussed yesterday. Not simply to solve how to eat, sleep, mate and defend better, that even the animals are doing successfully without any technical advancement, without any high level intelligence, discrimination, ability. And what is the connection today? After the Vedanta Sutra, the first sutra says, now that you have got the human form of life, inquire about Brahman. And the next sutra says, what is Brahman? So if you want to solve all these problems,
then we have to go to the root of the problem. Who created all this mess, first of all? And somebody is responsible for this creation. Then we ask that person, Baba, why did you create like this? Why didn't you make a world where no problem is there? Either you did a mistake, then we set it right. You tell us. What was your plan, master plan? Show your blueprint beyond, before creation. Some engineer creates some building. They say, show us, what is the problem? Why things are hanging like this? That means something is wrong. So the why, if you want to solve the problem, we have to go to the root. Why is this world having so many problems? Find out if there is a creator. If there is, catch that fellow. Why did you create like this? That is why, if you want to solve the problem, we want to find out, does really everything by chance has come about, or behind everything, is there a person? Is there some energy? Is there some source? That is the meaning of this session. Does really God exist? You know, behind everything, is there some person? Is there some energy? Is there some organized manufacturing, or, you know, by chance things are coming out? Therefore, this inquiry is very important. Next. Yeah, no. Go back. So, does God exist? This is a $1 million question. In this regard, I would like to tell you a small story. Once, there was a saint who lived very close to a village. The villagers decided to invite the saint for lecturing about God. After a lot of invitations, at last the saint agreed to come. Whole village had gathered. He came, and before he began his lecture, he said, I want to ask all of you, do you all believe in the existence of God? And everyone raised their hands. Yes, we do believe in the existence of God. All of you? Yes. Absolutely? Yes. So then there is no point in me speaking about God. Then he went away. They were shocked. They said, this is too much. So next time they talked amongst themselves and they said, next time nobody should raise their hands. So again they went and, you know, requested him. After many requests, he said, okay, I'm going to come. He came and everyone was ready, and sure enough, he had the next time. So, do you all believe in the existence of God? No hands came up. Even the children were told, don't raise hands. Nobody says, nobody? Absolutely? If none of you does believe in the existence of God, there's no point in me speaking. And he went off. The villagers were confused. They said, what to do now? Then they said, all right, next time we'll do. All ladies will sit this side, all gents will sit this side. And half of the villagers will raise their hands and half will not. Then he has to speak. So after many requests, again the third time the saint came. So he said, okay, do you all believe in the existence of God? Half of them raised their hands, and half of them. So you believe? Yes. And you? No. All right, those who believe, convince those who don't believe. And he walked away. Now you may ask, what's the relevance of this joke? Actually, our situation, especially in India, is like this. We are like the cat on the wall. None of us can swear that we are atheists. Hopefully not. Not all. We do believe that, you know, there is some high power, there is a power, there may be some power, some God is light, God, some idea of God is there, or maybe there is something. But if challenged scientifically, logically, you know, with your hand on your hearts, do you believe God exists? Well, maybe. Our situation is like this, half, one hand up, one hand down. Right? It's a fact. Because no one can swear and stand by convincingly, yes, explain, I believe in God and this is the information. And no one at the same time can claim, at least anyone who is a little cultured, who has come from a pious background, no, there is some higher power, and there are also so many gods, so somebody may be there up there. But none of us are actually clear about it. And therefore, it's very important to very systematically and scientifically understand, because we are challenged by modern science to question everything. And the traditions is not giving us proper answers. So when we challenge those tradition followers of some rituals, we don't get a proper answer. And therefore, our faith is disturbed. At the same time, scientifically, it is proved that scientists are able to control everything, and everything is, you know, by coming by. We have a tendency to believe, because science actually shows some results. But at the same time, the proposal that actually everything come, you know, man came by monkeys and everything happened by Big Bang theory, doesn't seem to truly satisfy our innermost self. So we are like this, you know, half pulled by two sides. I remember when I was a student, I won't say I was an atheist, but at least I was an agnostic, in the sense that I did believe that there is something, you know, nothing happened just by chance. There must be something. But deep inside, I was not convinced. So this question was always there. And we were a group of students who were decided, we don't believe in God. Why? Because we were disgusted by what went on in the name of religion. Even at that time when we were students, this Ram Janam Bhoomi issue was very strong. So I said, in the name of religion, all this nonsense is going on. It's better not to believe in that kind of religion, which simply increases violence and, you know, and hatred towards brotherhood of man. And therefore, we were in one sense kind of atheists. Not at heart, but we were disgusted with what went on. That's practically all of our situation. But then, so we were all like a club of agnostics or whatever, atheists. And then after we passed out, I continued my post-graduation, and this fellow started private practice. And after 2 months, he sent me an invitation for the inauguration of his clinic. And I went, and I was shocked. This colleague of mine had arranged a nice picture, and he had called a brahmana, and some worship is going on. I said, come on, we believe that we don't believe in any God. And you know what his answer was? He told me, he took me aside and he said, he was a Delhi, from Delhi. He said, dekh yaar, in case God is there, let him be satisfied na. Are itna kharcha kiya ho, building dhas gaya to. In case he is, let him be also satisfied. You keep quiet and give your blessing so that, you know, don't interfere with my affairs here. In case he is there, let him be satisfied. Kya hota hai? 150 rupaye kharcha hai. Kar dete na udhar. Then this set me deeply thinking as to why people become religious, even if they believe in God. Number one, out of fear. In case that fellow is there, he shouldn't cause any problems. So you be also pacified. So even if we believe, mostly it is out of some kind of fear. But none of us are really sure. And when things go wrong, in spite of pacifying, then we say, no use pacifying that fellow because he can't do anything. Anyway, impotent, useless God, forget it. Let's look for some other in the supermarket of gods. You know, somebody else is available who can do some miracles. So this is one aspect. Or many a times it's because of pressure to be considered a pious person is good in society. Of course, today that's also going away. It's fashionable to call yourself an atheist. I don't believe in all this. I am a believer of science. So either because of pressure from family or the elders in the family, No, you must do this ritual. Okay, as long as you are there, okay, just to satisfy you. I see sometimes children come to drop their parents. You go to the temple, bye. What time you will come out, you tell me, mom, I'll come and pick you up. So the grandmother or, you know, somebody comes. So it is only meant for, you know, oldies who have no other better business to attend. Anyway, so the idea is, until and unless we are really convinced scientifically, logically, systematically, this belief is not going to stay long. Under pressure, we are going to wilt. Everything is going to fall apart. And to be very scientific means to know things as they are. And if we want to discuss today God, we better define the terms first. Science means defining. Because if you don't have proper definition, I may talk for 2 hours and you may have your own conception, I may have my own conception. Therefore, before I start discussing about does really God exist, when I say God, what do I mean? I would like to clarify so that there are no misconceptions and different imaginary concepts. For example, even before that, proof of the existence. Definition is the later part. Let's first understand, do we really believe? What is the proof? Because generally, whenever you ask something in scientific circles, you have to give evidence. So what is the evidence that there may be a God? We see, for every natural urge, biological urge, that is there within the living entity, there is a fulfillment that is provided in the nature. Already, even before we ask for it. For example, there is a natural urge for thirst, and water is provided to quench that thirst. There is an urge, hunger, and according to the different living entities, different kinds of foodstuffs are provided for them already in the nature. At a particular time in life, in the animals and every living entities, there is a natural urge for union with the opposite sex. And that is also provided in nature to fulfill that particular desire or urge. In this way we find, for every natural urge, there is already a fulfillment provided. Similarly, in times of trouble, distress, or when people are confused, there is a natural urge to take shelter of some higher power. Even in the most aboriginal African tribe, if you visit, you will find they also worship some higher power. They worship the mountain, they worship the sea, they worship the sky. Because of the expanse, large expanse, they are so powerful. And we are dependent on them for our existence. Therefore, there is a natural tendency to take shelter of some higher power when in trouble or to depend for our basic maintenance. Kind of a gratitude to be expressed, or in times of trouble we take shelter. There is a natural urge to take shelter of a higher power. So therefore, one proof is, if all of these are provided for this natural urge, there must be this some higher power. Now, the second proof, creation implies a creator. If you find a wristwatch lying on Chowpatty Sea Beach, just where the waves are hitting the shore, would you say that by the hitting of the waves on the sands, over a period of time, this beautiful 17 jewel quartz wristwatch has been manufactured? Would anyone with a sane mind agree? If I were to say this beautiful building, with, you know, beautifully arranged lights and fans and chairs, everything. One day there was a big storm and all cement bags were flying in the air. Some rocks were flying, the wooden planks were flying, and some iron filings were flying. And at the end of the storm, we found this building standing here. So beautifully organized, 3 doors, you know, everything matching, symmetrical. Would any scientific being, rational being, agree to this? By chance, everything happened. Behind this, there is no man. There's no creation. There's no creator. It's foolish. Such a complicated creation, even a small thing like a wristwatch, requires so much of thinking. And here we see the human being, which defeats all computers, all kinds of robots that have been created so far. You get hurt, and there is a facility in the body to repair itself. Can you imagine? The human brain, till now nobody was able to find out all the facilities available in the brain, all the complexities of the brain. Yet, what to speak of the heart? Every cell of the body is so complicated and intricate. We will discuss that in the slideshow. Amazing. Every human cell is more complicated than most organized cities, with all their different systems of working, administration. And we say that by chance we just came about, things evolved by itself. How foolish, how absurd. Laws imply a lawmaker. There is a law. At 7 o'clock everyone comes, everything is arranged, you have to sit here, 9 o'clock we go. To organize something, it requires so much of intelligence. There are laws of traffic, there are laws of punishment, and you know, etc. There are penal codes, then there are other laws. In every company there are some laws of Companies Act, right? So many laws, traffic laws and things like. Similarly, in nature we find there are physical laws, chemical laws, thermodynamic laws, laws of gravity, laws of electromagnetism. Based on that law, things are very organized functioning. Had it been a haphazard thing, you can't predict what's going to happen tomorrow. Can you depend on anything happening by chance? There's a perfect law. In fact, you can predict what's going to happen so much because there is a perfect law. Just imagine if one day all the police were to go on strike and all the traffic guys go away, traffic police. And you think all the traffic will move smoothly and slowly and very nice? If all the traffic lights go off, few minutes during traffic hours, if the things is not in control, chaos prevails all over. And to solve it, it takes many, many, many hours. Small city like Bombay, a small square like somewhere in Sion or Chembur, bottleneck areas. And so many complicated, the whole universe. First of all, this earth planet, seasons are coming on perfect time, rains incoming perfectly time. Imagine rains were to come at any time, any day. People will go mad if they didn't know when summer would come, when winter would come. One day you put something for drying and rain comes and finishes. Everything is finished. No crops would grow. Because you can predict all these laws are so perfect, you can live happily and at least, you know, arrange and with a sane mind. Otherwise man will become insane. Nothing would work. One day if gravity doesn't work, decides today is a holiday for me, people will be flying. Can you just imagine? Chaos. So laws imply a lawmaker. If in an organization, to run an organization, all intellectual people, a board of directors should come together and beat their brains for hours and hours and hours together just to run a small organization of few employees and to keep them satisfied. Such a big task. So many big, big brains coming together to run a small organization. And this whole planet Earth, the whole solar system, the whole galaxy, the Milky Way, the cluster, super cluster, the whole universe, perfectly in order. Everything you can predict, what's going to happen. Cosmic laws. astronomy, astrology, things are going to move in a particular order. And we say that by chance everything is moving perfect. It's just like saying, by chance, in spite of the fact that no traffic flow works, no traffic lights work, by chance I think every Bombay traffic will move smoothly. Try it one day. It's a challenge. If not, we better accept an intelligence behind this whole laws. And if there is an intelligence, that means there is an intelligent who's working behind it. Whoever that be, there is some intelligence which has made this, created these laws, maintaining these laws, perfectly coordinating it. Things are going perfectly. So, it makes sense. Okay, also theoretically let's accept that, okay, there is some power. But then now let's define God. Here when I say G-O-D with a capital G, what do I mean? I would like to clarify. Why clarification is necessary? Because if we don't define terminologies, at the end of the discussion, each one may have their own idea. When I was in high school, I came across a beautiful cartoon. I would like to show you how same terminology may create difference of understanding if you don't define terminology. That's scientific. A cartoon, they have two pictures. The first picture showed an old man sitting. He's got a picture of Durga Devi with 10 hands sitting on a tiger and he's chanting the mantra, O mother, hey ma, hey ma, hey ma. And the next cartoon showed his son also sitting beside him, 16-year-old, and he is also chanting, Hey Ma, Hey Ma, Hey Ma. Both are chanting Hey Ma. And there was a bubble that showed the heart throb of early 70s. Now also she appears. Maybe she may stand for election. So, both are chanting same name, but each have their own conception. So I don't want that to happen here. I'm talking of God and you are thinking of your own person whom you worship, your neighbor probably, or whoever who creates some miracle. So let's clarify very clearly. When I say God, what do we mean here? At least in this assembly. Go to the next. So, God by definition means, number one, He should be the ultimate source of everything that exists. If there is anyone, if there is any energy, if there is anything that fits this definition, that by definition is what we call as God. I am here because of my parents. They created me. I was created by them. They are there because of their parents. They are there because of their parents. They are there because of their parents. If you go back like that, was there a person from whom everything came? Who had no other source? Because if he had some father, then he would become the ultimate source. But then you may say, no, that doesn't make sense because it's like, which came first, the hen or the egg? Right? This is logical. The hen came first or the egg came first? But we are talking about the source of egg and the hen both. If there is any entity, if there is any energy, if there is any source who created everything that you see, but who has no other source, He is the original source of everything that exists, who has no other source. It's very difficult to imagine. But if there is anything which fits this definition, only that personality or only that individual or only that entity or only that energy or only that source, we will refer to here onward as God with a capital G. Ultimate source of everything. Sarva Karana Karanam. He is the source of all sources, anything that exists. Anadi. He has no Adi. And he is the Adi. He is the original source. If there is anything that fits that definition, that we call as God. Next, not only should he be the original source of everything that exists, that can be imagined, that cannot even be imagined on this planet, in this cosmic creation, but he should also be the supreme controller. God means the supreme controller. All of us are controllers to some extent or the other, right? We have some control. We can control some things. This gentleman is controlling this computer and things are happening. I tell him, I have to request him and things happen. Otherwise, it's not under my control. It's under his control. Sometimes that goes out of control also. It's also not under his control. So, we find that some things are under our control. But not everything. Somebody may say, I'm the head of the state, head of the country, is the prime minister. He has some control for some time, if he is fortunate, 5 years. And if, you know, people don't break away and the majority is not lost. He has some power over some decisions. Not all the decisions of all the citizens throughout the state. People may have some control over a state. People may have some control over some particular area. What to speak of that? People feel they have control over a small unit of the family. But sometimes they find that things are not under their control. I once saw a beautiful wall plate on the side of the road. It said, I am the master of this house. And under bracket, I have my wife's permission to say so. So we find that things doesn't happen. You know, we may say we are under control. Not everything happens according to our desire. What to speak? Forget about the family, which is a bigger unit. Individual body is not under our control. Can you control the heartbeat? Otherwise, heart failure means you just massage and say, no, run because I have an important meeting. Can you stop your body from growing old, getting diseased, ultimately dying? We are not even the controller of our own body, what to speak of controlling others. There are some, you know, systems in the body. This is called by different names, which are helpful, which are under your control, and there are some systems which are not under your control. The heartbeat is not under your control. The growing of the hairs, that's not under your control. At one time, I desired that hair grow nicely. And now I pray that it shouldn't grow so fast, otherwise every day I have to shave. Things are not under my control. It's going at its own speed. So, things are not like that. We can't even control our own body, what to speak of controlling others. But God, by definition, is He. Not a blade of grass can move without His sanction. Everything is completely under His control. But who is controlled by none? He is supremely independent. If there is any person who fits that definition, only that person we will call God. Not any Tom, Dick and Harry who just, you know, like does some tricks and says, I am God. Who can't control the hair from falling off his head. How can he control the universe? So, God is not so cheap. God means the supreme controller of everything that exists in this whole creation. That is God. Something great. Then, not only should he be the supreme, ultimate source of everything, a supreme controller, but he should be the supreme proprietor. Proprietor means owner. Now, we may think we own this house. You may have your houses, which is like coming from your ancestry. This is our ancestral home in our hometown. We feel that we are the owners. But truly speaking, we are not the owners of the home. Even though you may say, I have, see, papers I have to prove that this house belongs to me. Recently, few years back in Belgaum, they had a town planning which decided to have a ring road all over Belgaum. That means running all over the city, connecting every part. So they decided and they gave notice. They decided where the road will come. And wherever there were buildings on that particular site where the road would come, they were given orders to vacate with promise that they will be given at some different place, the same amount of area. People were shocked. They were living since, you know, their whole ancestors were living. And they thought that this is ours. But they realized that this piece of land belongs to the government. If the government wants, they can say that we are going to relocate you. You better move. You have to move. There were so many, they were trying to have dharna protection, you know, procession to stamp it. But one day the bulldozed, everything was bulldozed. Anyone who protested. Everyone understood the hard reality that actually they were not the owners of the land also, in spite of the fact that they have paid and have papers. But ultimately, the government is the proprietor. Of course, the government is also not the proprietor. If there is a war and somebody else takes over, then they have become the proprietor. The land is always there, but proprietors keep coming and going, putting their flag and saying, we are the controller, we are the proprietor, they ultimately die. But we find that all these things exist since time immemorial and will continue to exist for time immemorial. But in between, people come and claim proprietorship. That's all. In the local train, you find this. Somebody is sitting, you know, because he's paid for the trip. And maybe to adjust something, you know, something is setting. So he gets up and sits down, sits on somebody else's lap. And he just pulls him up. Get up, it's my seat. Oh, I have already sat down, this is my seat. And they go on fighting. I saw one time this fighting going on. Two were fighting for the same seat. And the third, people were afraid to sit because, you know, they were fighting for the same seat. Ultimately, one of them had to get down in a particular station. He pulled that other fellow out. And the train left and they are fighting for a seat which is already gone. They continue to fight for half an hour more. Similarly, some ancestral property, fight is going on and both die and the children continue the fight, but now nobody is enjoying that thing, facility. But the facility is already there. It was there before you were born. It will be there after you die. But in between, we just put a thing and say, fight, fight, fight. I want, it's mine. So, supreme proprietor, God by definition is he who owns everything that exists eternally. If there is any person fits that definition, that is what is called God. And finally, not only should he be the ultimate source of everything, not only should that energy or that source, God, be the ultimate supreme controller and proprietor, but the most important of all, God by definition is he who is supreme enjoyer. Who is the ultimate enjoyer of everything that exists. Now, what do we mean by this? We also enjoy, right? So many times we eat something, we enjoy. But what does it mean to be a supreme enjoyer? Let us discuss who is an enjoyer. I'll give you an example which will make it clear. One day, late night, after a preaching program, I was returning back to the temple. It is around 11:30. And there is a hotel near Grand Road Station, nearby. And I saw, at around 11:30, a man drew up in a huge car. Big car. He just drew up near the hotel, got up from the car, went to the cashier of that hotel, and he said, "Aaj ka collection nikalo." And that fellow poured out everything in a bag and gave it. Now, this was not a dacoit or a thief who was just, you know, under knife point. He was just telling, "Collection nikalo." Why? Because the hotel belongs to him. All others are serving, but he comes at the end of the day and says, "Aaj ka collection." And the whole bag of money he just took and drew away. So I was thinking, he is the real enjoyer. All others are working, but the profits he enjoys. So, who is the real enjoyer? The real enjoyer. Others get their salary at the end of the month. They are only cooperator. But the real enjoyer is the controller. Or the, sorry, proprietor. The person who is the original proprietor is the real enjoyer. All others, as long as they cooperate with the proprietor, they get their share. So, to be really enjoyer, you must be the sole and whole proprietor. That means, and proof of proprietorship is control. If you say, I own that car which is standing outside the gate. Acha, can I borrow it? No, I don't have the key. The key is with someone else. You know, you have to ask his permission. What is the meaning of being the proprietor? This is your house, but you can't enter. Proprietor means complete controller. Everything under that thing is under my complete control. And no one can stop you from doing what you want, when you want, how you want it. That is enjoyer. Enjoyer means he must be the real proprietor. And proof of proprietorship is control. And you can get control only when you have created something. You know how it has been created. You know why it has been created. And you have everything under your control. Therefore, God by definition is the supreme enjoyer. We are all cooperators. He is the supreme enjoyer. Why? Because he owns everything that exists. What is the proof? Not a blade of grass can move without his sanction. Why? Because he has created it like that. You can't change the laws. Can you change the laws of nature? You may be a big scientist. You can only discover the laws. Can you change the laws? Okay, from tomorrow, we will turn a knob and gravity will work reverse. Everything will start going up. From tomorrow onwards, chemicals will not behave the way they are. Physical laws will change. Magnetism will no more act. You can at most discover the laws, but you can't change the laws. You can change the laws that you have made. But even that has to be sub-laws under the important law. If you manufacture in your society some law, you know, society's house, residential society, they make law. They are should be the bylaws of the state. You can't manufacture your own law, which is against the laws of the state. In this way, we find that there are some laws which is beyond our control. You can't change it. Therefore, we accept that there is a supreme enjoyer. Who is the supreme proprietor? Because he is in control of everything. And that's because he has created it. And he knows how he has created, why he has created, and how to control it. So if anyone, any energy, anything, any person, any individual, any entity fits this definition, only then we will call that personality as God with a capital G. Otherwise, anyone who claims himself to be God but cannot do all this is not G-O-D but the reverse of it. D-O-G. Why? He is barking, I am God, I am God, I am God. Ultimately he dies. And then four people carry him in. That is the end of Solomon Grundy. Finish. So you may bark around thinking, I am God, I am God, I am God. But ultimately that God unceremoniously dies and he is put inside the grave. This is not God. Any cheap person may claim, but this is not what's God. Now, having understood this concept of what is the definition of God, let us find out, does someone really like that exist? After this particular definition, we have to think, does someone really exist to this definition? Someone who fits into this? Let's find out. Now, how do we... Now we are going to acquire knowledge about God. So acquiring knowledge, let's take that process. Now I want to know God. Before knowing God, let us discuss about how do people acquire knowledge? What is the process of acquiring knowledge? How do we acquire all the knowledge that we have right now? It is described there are three prominent ways. There are so many other ways, but predominantly they can be put under three broad categories of acquiring knowledge. The first way of acquiring knowledge is called pratyaksha praman, or knowledge acquired by direct sensual perception. For example, how children learn? The mother carries the child and then it says, beta, this is a bus. Say bus. So that child, oh ho, this is bus. Anything which has two wheels and big, everyone sitting, this is bus. What is this, beta? Chair. So you see something, an object, and you hear a word and you relate and then you say, oh ho, this is how it is. This is called pratyaksha praman. This is how we acquire knowledge. We see so many things and we hear the authority speaking that this is what it is. This is called this. And they say, oh ho, achha, this is what it is. This is called pratyaksha praman, or evidence by our acquiring knowledge through direct sense perception. But then there is a problem. It has, this process of acquiring knowledge has its own limitations. Why? Because the eyes cannot see everything. There are some things that the eyes cannot see. The air cannot be seen. And some things are beyond. You know, you have not seen something, what's happening in Antarctica, because you've never gone there. You may see pictures, okay. You don't know what's happening in the sun planet or what's beyond that in the universe. So, because our senses have limited range, they can't see too close or too far. We have a hearing range from 20 to 20,000 hertz per second. Infrasonics and ultrasonics can't be heard. You can't hear everything. You have nose. You can smell. But if it is at a distance, if it is too intense, particular range, you can smell. Not all, not everything. The dogs can smell better than us. Therefore, the sniff dogs they bring. The sense of touch, it can be misleading also. If you put your hand in warm water and then in hot water and then in warm water, the warm water feels a little cold. But if you put your hand in cold water first and then in warm water, the same warm water feels hot. So there is some illusion, you know, optical illusion, auditory illusion. We call it auditory illusion. You see mirage in the desert and you think there is water. So the eyes sometimes may be under illusion. You may hear and you think, oh, my friend has come. Then you open the door and, sorry, I thought it's somebody else. It's called illusion. So our senses are limited. Many of the times they see some illusion, or sometimes, you know, you hallucinate something. And also, we are tendency to cheat. Cheat means you think you know something and you claim, and then you realize after some days, some other person comes and says, what he said is wrong. Today, with recent data, we have found that that's not the truth, this is the truth. Therefore, we find our textbooks are changing every few years. Right? In Dalton, you know, in 1920, Dalton said atom is the smallest particle. And people died thinking that is the ultimate truth. But now we know that, you know, atom can be broken down, electron, proton, neutron. Who knows, tomorrow some other tron may come. And then people will have a different perception. Textbooks will change. So in this way we find that you claim you know everything, but then tomorrow somebody comes and says, he knew nothing. Today I know something better. So that is limitations. Therefore, with all these limitations, it is very difficult to understand everything. What to speak of God? Because God, if he has created this, he must have existed before creation. That means long, long, long back. Number two, he existed outside of this creation. If he created this universe, he must be outside this universe. He is far, far away. So anything nearby you can see, you can hear, you can touch. But if he is existing, you know, you can't see Akbar now. Right? You can't see Gandhi now because he's already died and gone. So God is the oldest of all oldies, because he's the original founder of all the living entities. So he must have existed long, long back in history. Number two, he exists beyond, in terms of distance. So this way of understanding knowledge through perception, direct sense perception, is not a suitable equipment or suitable process for acquiring knowledge of something such as God. So what is the next item? The next way of acquiring knowledge is called knowledge by inference or Anuman Praman. Anuman means you see one event and you see another event, and because of your previous experiences of the world, you infer, oh, something like this must have happened in between, therefore this has happened. So this is called inference. Anuman. Anuman means guesswork. Therefore we find so many scientists all over the world, they are seeing the world, and all the different scientists give different understanding of how life was created, how the whole creation came about. They are all differing in their opinion and all say that I am right. How can it be possible? Everyone is seeing the same world, but everyone is giving their own opinions. Like for example, this is like, can you go to that? You all know, how about once 6 blind men went to see the elephant? And these blind people, they had never seen an elephant. They never knew what an elephant is. So they went there. Each one held different parts of the body of the elephant. Somebody held the trunk of the elephant. He said, elephant is like a hose pipe. Someone touched the leg and he said, oh, elephant is like a pillar. Someone touched the tusk and he said, it's like a dagger. Someone touched the belly and he said, like a wall. Do you think they are wrong? No. They are perfectly right. But all of them are absolutely wrong. Because they are getting one aspect of the truth. But they are not getting the whole truth. Because their sense of seeing is limited. Very much limited. Even if we have the eyes 20/20 vision, we can't see everything. We can't feel everything. We can't experience everything. Therefore, you have to speculate. So one fellow may speculate, I'm only seeing the trunk, but it may be 5-mile long hose pipe. Somebody may touch the leg and say, I'm only touching one aspect, and he will speculate that the elephant is a 5-mile long pillar. And therefore, some part of it makes sense, but some of it is speculation. Where they start speculation and where their sense perception stops, there is a difficulty. Therefore, we find so many scientists coming out with so many opinions about one phenomenon, which has obviously only one reason. I'll give you a small example which will make it clear. This is like a joke. I'd heard this as a joke when I was a little young, but it makes sense. One day, there was a gathering of top scientists from all fields, respective fields. They came for a conference. After the conference, there was a lunch break. So all went out and they were taking their lunch. On the other side of the compound, they saw a man limping. This man was limping on one side and walking. So being topmost scientists, being very specialized in their field, immediately each one started diagnosing what his problem is. They were so experts. So the orthopedic surgeon, the topmost orthopedic surgeon said, I know what is his problem. That's because he started, you know, with hi-fi language. This particular muscle of this particular bone and this joint, this ligament has been, this tendon has moved a little in this particular angle at this degree. And therefore, this has caused this ligament to move like this. And therefore, he is walking. And this limp is called some big definition. Hi-fi, everything goes above our head. Right? Because the expert is speaking. Then a neurologist came. Absolutely wrong. all his tendons and bones are all right. Actually, he has got something called as cerebral palsy, where the athetoid part or the cerebellum is affected because of this particular neuron, and the dendrites are not communicating to the neuron, and therefore that results in blah, 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 and therefore he is going like this. Everyone said, yeah, makes sense. And in this way, each one came about, and they all gave their phenomenon. Ultimately, all of them decided, why not confirm from that fellow? So they all decided, let's call him. So they called him, Baba, come here. Yes, sir. He walked and he said, see, so and so, world famous neurologist, psychologist, this, all. And he said, this is their opinion about your problem. This is their opinion, his opinion about your problem, and some, you know, some syndrome, big syndrome. So we would like to confirm which of us is right and what's your problem. He said, problem? What problem? I have no problem. Then why are you limping? He says, my slipper is broken. I'm looking for a cobbler. I'm dragging my feet because my Hawaii slipper is broken. So we used to hear this joke. But this is, it's a very small, funny incident. But if you apply, think about this thing in a very deep way, you realize everyone is watching the same world. Everyone is watching the same laws. Everyone is seeing the same thing. But according to their previous understanding, previous conceptions, they're speculating and filling up the rest of the gap with their own nonsense. And ultimately we find super specialists giving different opinions on the same thing. And most probably the thing may be totally different from everything that's told. Therefore, we can't rely on such a changing kind of a truth for understanding the absolute truth. So therefore, this way of speculating or inference cannot be the best for understanding God. So what else is left? There is one more process. And that process is called Shabda Praman. Shabda Praman means hearing from authority. When you hear from an authorized source, you generally tend to rely upon them. Right? When some big incident happens, nobody listens to All India Radio. They would prefer to listen to BBC. Why? Because they give real report. Somebody says, you know, in this accident, 200 people died. But then you hear BBC, 2,000 people have died. That's more reliable. Why? Because after the incident has happened, when you have checked later, you have found that this particular report has been truthful. Truthful to the actual incident, and they have stood the test of time. Over a period of time, whatever they have reported in the past, till now nothing has been proved fault or something, you know, totally different from the actual event. Therefore, when such a thing happens, then you tend to develop faith. When you hear from proper authorized sources, if you have some problem, heart problem, you don't go to or if you have some skin problem, you don't go to a cobbler and say, what do you think, you know? You are expert in skins, you know. What do you think about my problem? This itching is there. He can't tell you. He's not an authorized person. Better go to a skin specialist. Similarly, when you hear from that, this is your diagnosis, then you tend to have more faith than on a person who is a layman to that. So similarly, if you want to know about such an important thing, because you want to solve the problems of your life, to know who created everything, about God, there is one way, which is called the word of authority. And what is that authority? That authority is the Veda. The Vedas. Now, Veda doesn't mean what Indians or the Hindus follow. No, it is a misunderstanding of this term, Veda. Veda is a very broad term. Veda comes from the root word with. With means to know. The word Vidya, Vidwan. Vidwan means one who knows. Vidya means knowledge. And Veda means the original, infallible body of knowledge. House of knowledge. That is called Veda. It is not the monopoly of only Hindus or those who know Sanskrit. No. Veda doesn't mean simply some books which were written by some sages in the sitting in the, some caves. No. Veda means absolute knowledge. Original, infallible knowledge. It has been documented in Sanskrit by some people. Just like if all the physics books got destroyed throughout the universe, that doesn't mean the law of gravity will stop functioning. No. The law, the physics laws of books on physics, they only speak about the laws. The laws are existing. It is independent of some books which document it. Vedas are the body of knowledge of the laws and what is behind everything. It can't be restricted to some, you know, Hindus or Muslims or Christians and things like this. It's just like science. 2 + 2 = 4. It's not that for Hindus it is 2 and 2 = 4 and for Muslims it is 3.5. Or for Americans it is this one and for Africans it is 2.5. It's a science. And this exists even if all the mathematics books got destroyed. These are some principles, fundamental principles of truth. They have been documented by the great sages after deep realization in books. That's all. And when you hear it from proper source, then you can understand, have access to that. So it doesn't mean you have to know Sanskrit to understand Veda. Anyone who has a desire to know and approaches a proper authority can understand the Veda. It's a body of knowledge accessible to anyone who has the inclination to know it and approaches the proper authority. So this is called Veda. Veda means body of knowledge of everything that exists, not only for this planet Earth, but the whole cosmic manifestation and its creation. And its purpose and how things are working. Every aspect under the sun is dealt with in the Vedas. It's not the monopoly of some few people who know it or who wants to say that this is only belongs to this part of the world. Not geographical. Veda can't be restricted by geographical area or a particular group of community of people. No. It's the absolute truth. So, now, why do we accept the Veda? Because the Vedas itself say that where is it coming from? It is coming from an absolute source. So the Vedic statements are axiomatic truths. What are axiomatic truths? They are truths. The proof of it is that statement itself. You can't take shelter of some other statement to prove this. This statement is the proof because this itself says. That's called axiomatic truth. You have reached the axiom, which is the root. From there, everything comes out. It's not existing on somebody else's authority. On its own authority, it is the truth. So why Vedas are truth? Because the Vedas say they are the truth. Why? Because it is infallible. What is the proof? You may say, no, you Hare Krishnas, you may say Vedas, because you are Hindus. No. Test the knowledge. The Vedic knowledge, since time immemorial, is infallible. Has never been proved wrong. Every statement of it has stood the test of time and never been proved to be false. This is the proof of the authority of a body of knowledge. That over a period of time, they don't say, sorry, we have to make an amendment because suddenly we realize that, that what statement is wrong and therefore we are sorry to say that we had told something else. We take back our words. No. The Vedic truths are existing since time immemorial and they are true. They have been found to be true for all time to come. For all people, under all circumstances. That is Veda. What is the proof? I would like to just briefly give you, because there are so many, but I don't want to go into detail because of lack of time. But I'll give you a few instances of how, even before our science, as we understand it, today's science, many discoveries were made. Even before that, there are statements in the Vedic scriptures which were compiled thousands of years ago. And they speak about certain things which was considered to be completely mind-boggling, which have now been confirmed by our science, so-called science, what we understand it today, to be yes, 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 it's truth. For example, just a few, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, which was compiled 5,000 years ago by Vyasa, it says, even today, that word is there, this planet Earth is considered to be Bhugol. This word Bhugol has been used. And it is said it has Saptadweep. It has seven continents or seven islands. Now, only in the last 15th century, 14th century, America was discovered, and before that people came to Noho. Till then people, you know, when Columbus started sailing, people thought that the world was flat and you will go and fall into nowhere. People were not clear. At least from our science, we realize that they discovered, oh, the earth has to be round. But people couldn't understand it. The earth is round, you know. Fellow, from down you will fall down. They were not able to understand. But this scripture, which is compiled 5,000 years ago, the knowledge was known much before, says it is Bhugol. Bhu means the planet Earth, is gol, it is round. And not only that, it has seven islands. People think that at that time primitive people lived, they didn't even know anything beyond their area of stay. But no, it has said Saptadweepa. In fact, there is a king, Maharaj Ambarish, it is said, Saptadweepapati Mahim. He was the emperor of the whole planet Earth, which consisted of seven continents. Saptadweepapati Mahim. Mahim, that was the planet Earth. So we find so many references to bygone ages where kings ruled like this. Yes. There are so many others. Like for example, cow dung. In the scriptures it is said that the stool of any animals is considered obnoxious. If you pass stool, you are considered contaminated. You have to take bath to purify yourself, especially if you have to worship the Lord. But the stool of the cow dung, is considered very pure. In fact, to purify some place, you have to wash it with cow dung and cow urine. Therefore, the cow is considered very sacred. This is since time immemorial. Recently, in the late 40s, people discovered that within the cow dung and within the cow urine are so many antiseptic properties. And therefore, you know, it is very good to, you know, wipe the place in front, you know, no, it's a disinfectant and, you know, antiseptic and so many things. But this use is there since time immemorial. The Vedic scriptures say cow dung is considered very auspicious, very pure. To purify a place, you have to wash it. Any object you have to purify, you have to wash it with cow dung or cow urine, things like that. To purify a place, you spray cow urine. Human embryology. Only after the discovery of radiology as a science, after the Pierre and Marie Curie, this couple discovered radium, then the branch of radiology, and later it had, when it had developed, then embryology as a science started. And we found out how the uterus grows, and in the books of embryology we find all the description of from the first day to the ninth month when the child, you know, is born, what are the developments that is taking place within the uterus, within the embryo, within the mother's womb. Surprisingly, in Srimad Bhagavatam, which was compiled 5,000 years ago, information from the Vedas which existed since time immemorial, from the period of gestation, from the day one, inception, of the sperm within the ovum to the child birth, day by day, what are the development that has been described? When the seventh day, what happens? On 25th day, what happens? 1 month, what happens? Surprising. And about 15 years ago, one of our gynecologists, he did a parallel study of the Vedic scriptures versus current thing. And he found amazing parallel between both. He reported it in a magazine. It's amazing how the third month embryogenesis starts, how, you know, all this starts developing, how all the organs come into being. Amazing perfection. Not only that, there are descriptions about what is the thought process within the child's mind, which right now our science has no access to. What is the child thinking? What is the thought process of the child at the time of, say, 7 months onwards? That's described. We have no instruments as such from our technical point of view to measure. We may, if we are able to put some electrodes, we may get some alpha rays, gamma rays, that's all. But we don't even know what is the thought process, what is the child thinking within the womb. But even that is described in the scriptures. Even today, it's there. If you want more references, I can refer you to the books. These are commented upon by great souls, great acharyas of the past who lived 900 years ago, 1000 years ago. So this is a proof that they had commented. They knew all the science completely. And today we feel that we know a great thing. It's amazing instances of how test tube babies were born. People had that science of developing, just like in Gandhari's case, when she was not able to, Vyasdev comes and he asks, she curses her womb that Kunti had a child before hers. So a lump of flesh is born and Vyasdev comes and asks her to pour cool water on it till it dissolves into pieces, 100 pieces, asks it to be put in different pots, put it with ghee and chants a mantra and goes away. And simultaneously 100 children are born, headed by Duryodhan to Kunti. This is expressed in the Mahabharata. So many instances of children being born through, you know, like test tube babies. We feel there is a great technological advancement we have made, but this was all known. So, as a science, this was well known much before what we think, or generally it is Vedas are understood with some mythology. Right? And not only that, there are so many others. This is just a few pieces. But there are information about so many other branches of knowledge. In every branch, Dhanurveda, Ayurveda, Vastu, so many things like that. There are references about how everything should be done. Of course, you can't depend on today's guys. They make a good money out of it, creating fear in the minds of people. But it is much, much sacred than what we perverted reflection we find today. But they are much more. Even Ayurveda, it's amazing the principles of health that is being described. Today, unfortunately, it's so commercialized, everything has watered down, diluted, that even those things may not act the way. That doesn't make the knowledge less potent. Unfortunately, it's not been handed out properly. And it has got perverted. But the idea is, all this knowledge existed since time immemorial in its perfectness. Now you may say, that's all right, these are all past things. But the test of an authority is, how is he able to predict the future correctly and stand the test of time? In the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is considered the culmination of Vyasdev's composition of Vedas, the last composition of his was Srimad Bhagavatam, at the ripe maturity of his literary career. There are so many mentions. This is 5,000 years ago which was compiled. he mentions about the appearance of Lord Buddha. Where he will appear, when, who will be his father and mother, who will be his parents, what will be his activities, even that is mentioned. For those of you who are interested, I have given the references they can take note of and refer to in the Srimad Bhagavatam, which canto, which chapter and which verses. The first refers the canto, second is the chapter, the third reference is that of the verses, shlokas. Next. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who appeared just 500 years ago, is mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam and also in the Mahabharata. An event that happened only 500 years ago, that's been mentioned. And there are many other Upanishads also, which mentions where he will be born, what will be his mother, parents' name, what will be his activities, what will be his message. Next. Chanakya has been referred to. What will be his activities? That's the last. You know, as he mentioned, this is Kali Yuga. So he's mentioning, and after Chanakya, Chandragupta, etc., then he says, after that, Mlechhas and Yavanas will take over. And he has not bothered to write anymore, knowing probably that the governments will change every 3 months and few months. How much can he write? He says, afterward, there will be profound degradation. There will not be Rajarishis, kings with pure, you know, sage-like kings. They will go away and things will fall down to an abominable standard. Therefore, he says, Kali Yuga will prevail. He has not bothered to go into detail. Till that time, he has mentioned all the kings. The names of the kings are mentioned by order. Whose son will be who? After that, whose son will be who? Everything. Chandragupta Maurya and Ashoka Vardhan, how he will expand his kingdom and what will be his activities, is mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam. In fact, Jesus Christ is mentioned in the Bhavishya Puran, Isha. Where he will appear, what will be activities, whom, what category of people he will preach to. Muhammad, the messenger of God, where he will come, where he will appear, what will be his message, that's also described in the Atharva Veda and in the Bhavishya Puran. What will be his message, whom will he preach to? Next. In fact, there are so many others, but I would like to just give you a brief introduction of how these scriptures in one verse explain the essence of degradation of this age that we are living right now. This age where we are living is called in the Vedic scriptures as Kali Yuga. Yuga means millennium and Kali means Kalaha. Kalaha means two most prominent characteristics of this age will be quarrel and hypocrisy. For small things, people will quarrel. And number two, there will be hypocrisy. You claim to be something which you are not. People will be known only by their externals, not by their characteristics. A Brahmana will be known by if he has a thread or not. Whether he has the qualities of a Brahmana, no. A Kshatriya will be known by which caste he is or which title he has. Not whether he has the Lakshana. Everything in Kali Yuga.